Alrighty, good evening, everybody. Happy Tuesday. We have a call-in show tonight. This is our CFB Talk 59. We got the family here today. Today it is myself, JD Moore, hosting tonight with Sirius, our wonderful co-host as always. Bobak still continues on his vacation, but he'll be back nice and rested and ready to go for the rest of the season. Sirius, how are you doing tonight, my friend?
Doing great, JD. Ready to take some listener calls and talk about college football because we are officially within the two-week window to kicking off this season, finally.
Finally. I mean, we saw another poll come out very, very recently, the AP poll. Now, granted, you know, in the era of the playoff, it's still not the important poll. It's not that college football playoff ranking, but it's some kind of actual substantial analysis that comes in. It's not necessarily the coaches poll that comes in with the SID or the intern or a coach who isn't watching as much football, but we're finally actually seeing a larger pool, a larger data set, and we're actually getting some kind of substantial analysis on that. Of course, there's not a whole lot of surprises at the very top of the AP poll already. Alabama's your number one, Ohio State, the defending national champions, Georgia following right behind that. But Sirius, like when I'm first looking at this, there's a couple of notable things that I'm immediately seeing with this AP poll. And it kind of seems that after fourth, where you've got Clemson, it's kind of an open game of who you want to fill in with that 4 through 10 slot.
It actually makes me feel a little bit better about my own RCFB poll because I've been working on that and just trying to figure out where I want to put teams. And honestly, you've got Bama, Ohio State, Georgia there in some order at the top three. And then it just feels like there's a big gap where anything could happen because we've had so much turnover between rosters, between coaches, especially coaches leaving established teams. We talk about Brian Kelly going from Notre Dame to LSU. So, you know, those are two potential contenders there that have had some upheaval. You've got Lincoln Riley going from a very often playoff contending OU to USC and bringing a bunch of talent with him. There's just a lot of teams right now that it seems like they're in flux, possibly more than we usually see when it comes to those elite programs. At least that's my gut take right now. So I think that really, you look at the AP poll and you mentioned Clemson. If you look at it by points, Clemson is right there with Notre Dame, A&M, Utah, and Michigan. And that kind of could be contenders if things go right, but could also not be. You know, it could very easily be sitting outside of the top six or seven. So really, it's kind of striated here a little bit where you've got that top tier of the three easy picks, and then five or six more teams, and then everybody else. At least that's how I'm seeing it.
Yeah, it's really odd when you look at especially that pairing between four and eight. So that's Clemson, Notre Dame, A&M, Utah, and Michigan. You have less than 90 votes separating those five teams. And I mean, we want to talk about like a season of potential chaos. I mean, this is a year where, yes, they've got the composite talent. Yes, they're coming off a 10-win season, even if it was less than the normal standard than they've had in the last couple of years. But, you know, Clemson has a brand new offensive coordinator. They've got a brand new defensive coordinator. You still got a couple of questions at the quarterback position. But right now, that kind of looks like the fourth surest thing when you're looking at this college football situation, at least heading into the year. I mean, Alabama, Ohio State, Georgia, those are your provens. They have all the blue chips. They know what they're going to be doing in this season. But after that, man, I'm looking forward to a very fun ride to figuring out who four and beyond is going to be and who's going to challenge those top three teams. Of course, this is a call-in show. We want to hear from you. If you want to drop on down into that bottom left-hand corner, request to come on up. We'd love to hear your thoughts. And Reed, I know you are our first caller tonight. We love hearing from you. What is on your mind?
What's up, gentlemen? Thank you for taking my call. Sleeper top 10 teams. How do you see... You got the ACC, you got Clemson there. Do you think Florida State can sneak up in there? I'm trying to look for the sleeper top 10 teams. What are your all's thoughts on that? Thank you.
Well, first and foremost, I love that you did bring up Florida State. A quick promo for later this week. We will be having Carter Correls. He is the beat reporter for Florida State out of the Tallahassee Democrat. He's going to be joining us on a space this coming Thursday. So we'll be able to talk about the Seminoles very much in depth. But when I think about, you know, a sleeper top 10 team that's going to like poke their way in by the end of the season, I think USC at 14. I know that's not necessarily, you know, the edgiest pick, but you have Caleb Williams,
right,
at quarterback.
Right.
You have Jordan Addison. Mm-hmm. I think that's a team that I think a top 10 finish is not going to be necessarily out of the question. I think another team that you're going to be looking at is one of those three teams that's in that 19 through 21 slot right now. So that's your Arkansas, Kentucky, and Ole Miss. Now, I feel fairly confident that one of those three is going to end up in the top 10 just by nature of somebody has to come up, you know, second or third in the SEC. And I think Arkansas under Sam Pittman has built a fantastic program. Kentucky, you've got a returning quarterback in Will Levis. Ole Miss, I think, is going to be absolutely fascinating with Jackson Dart at quarterback. And I think when you look at that kind of talent that you have just completely compiled on all three of those teams, I think any of those would be a solid pick. I think if we want to go with an edge case, one that I think is going to really surprise some people in the top 10, you know, Houston is kind of sitting there at number 24 right now. We've typically seen that a G5 power, especially if they go and end up winning, you know, 10, 11, 12 games, they get into the New Year's Six Bowl, they pull off a victory. That's a team that normally ends up being in the top 10. Dana Holgorsen has some really strong talent coming back next year for the Cougars program. I could very much see them competing for the New Year's Six game for this year for the G5. Definitely, they have a great chance to be in the top 10 by the end of the season. Sirius, when you're looking at this list and you're looking for a sleeper team to finish in the top 10, what are some of the candidates you're looking at?
Well, to go back to the comment about the ACC, I think that somebody out of the Atlantic is going to wind up in the top 10. I'm just not sure who it is, because I think that you can make an argument for Clemson, obviously. But I also think that NC State, we've talked about them in the past. This is kind of, if they're going to make a push, this is their season. And then Wake Forest, if Wake can survive being without Sam Hartman for the first part of the season, and he comes back and he's healthy and he's playing at the level we expect him to be able to play at. I think that NC State and Wake Forest could both be spoilers in that Atlantic division if Clemson doesn't come back to the form that they've had pre-2021. But it's always a toss-up there, because those are the kind of the teams that I'm looking at the ACC, and I'm not really sure where I want to put them in my own personal poll. In terms of just general potential sleepers, Michigan State, I think, could make some noise, depending on how things shake out between them, Michigan, and Ohio State. They could always play spoiler there. They had a really, really good 2021 season, obviously. USC, as you said, they've got the coaching staff, they've got the talent, but it's year one in a new program. Who knows what's going to happen there? And then something's going to happen with the Big 12, and I'm not sure which one of those teams, if it's going to be Oklahoma, Baylor, or Oklahoma State, because they're not really sleepers. They're all in that 9 to 12 range, but there's so many unknowns there in terms of how their season's going to go. Kind of curious to see how that's going to shake out. Ole Miss, Arkansas, Wisconsin, I think, could all potentially be spoilers when you get down in towards, you know, like the back 10, last 10 spots on that top 25, personally.
I'm also trying to think of just the inverse question as well, because we've always seen in years past, you know, this top 10 that we have in this preseason AP poll, guaranteed we're going to see at least one of these teams is going to end up unranked by the end of the year. And it's a very interesting case to look at this year where, you know, Texas A&M, they went 8-4 in the regular season last year. They're number 6 in the country, at least according to the AP poll. Oklahoma, first time in a very long time they've had a first-time head coach. Now, granted, the last time they had that, they won a national championship, but how Brent Venables is going to break in a new quarterback with a new system, and especially with the news that we've heard with Cale Gundy being dismissed from the program after being the steady hand for so long, that's going to be a very fascinating case study to see if Oklahoma can continue their dominance. And then, of course, you know, with Baylor, I feel like anybody who has talked about Baylor, it doesn't matter if they've got Jeff Grimes on there again. It doesn't matter if they've got Dave Aranda doing, again, another calm, collected year. It doesn't matter if they still have Ron Roberts as their defensive coordinator. I don't think anybody has a good read on what Baylor is going to be contributing for this upcoming year. I think all those teams are going to be teams that, you know, it's going to be wild to watch how they try to stay in top 10 competition.
JD, if you ask me, talking about teams with the most potential to go into absolute free fall in the top 10, it's got to be Notre Dame. They start off with Ohio's.
You got to elaborate.
This new coach under Marcus Freeman. They start out with Ohio State, number two team in the country, returning an absolutely massive treasure trove of talent this year on September 3rd as their first game, and it's on the road in the Shoe. And then you add into the fact that they're going to have Clemson, they're going to have USC, and they've got a pretty decent stack of teams that they're going to have to play along the season, that if they come out and we see them get absolutely, you know, stomped by Ohio State in week one, the reaction from poll voters I think is going to push them pretty far down. And if they don't come out and start dominating teams in that stretch of Marshall, Cal, UNC, BYU, who has been a relatively tough game for Power 5 opponents the past few years, and even Stanford, who could always have a bounce back season, that center stretch of their schedule, if they don't come back and start dominating teams, depending on how everybody else does, it could actually force them down pretty far on the list. And God forbid they pick up another loss or two in that span, I think they're potentially looking at trouble in terms of maintaining that rank. But we'll see.
Well, see, the counter argument that I have to throw in for that, for at least Notre Dame, is, you know, if you look at their season last year, you know, they started the year with that overtime squeaker against a bad Florida State team, ranked number 9 in the country. They moved up to number 8 in the country after that. Then they played Toledo, won that game by a field goal in South Bend, and they still continued to be in the top 12 of that poll. You didn't have a convincing win against Purdue, still continued to be a higher up team. And then, you know, you had a great win against Wisconsin, but then you had Cincinnati, a G5 team, came in and pantsed them in South Bend, but they still remained as a top 15 team as they pulled out their wins against, you know, the next game after that. That's a field goal win against Virginia Tech, a Virginia Tech team that wasn't very good either. And they ended up firing Justin Fuente. I think one of the weird things for Notre Dame is, unless you're going to see kind of like, I think it was that 2013, 2014 era, whenever they put out that 4-8 season, I feel like they're one of those legacy programs that will always get that benefit of the doubt. And unless you're putting out some really bad losses, doesn't matter how good the wins are, if the wins continue, I think you're going to be fine with Notre Dame. But I think at least when it comes down to, you know, how they respond back to Ohio State, I think you raise a great point there. But I'm also not going to write them off of, you know, they lose to Ohio State, get a couple of meh wins, and still stay in that top 10 power.
Great point that it always, and this is something that a lot of fans don't always catch, is that it's not just how your team does, it's how everybody else around you in the rankings does as well. Where if everybody ahead of you loses and you lose too, but not as badly, you could actually benefit from it. And I think that's probably why we saw that movement with Notre Dame last year. But I will say, I think that in the past, Notre Dame has gotten the benefit of the doubt because of Brian Kelly. And now he's gone. They've got a first-time head coach in Marcus Freeman. That's not something that we've seen at Notre Dame in a long time. And are the poll voters going to give them the benefit of the doubt when they have this change at the top of the coaching staff? And are they going to have a little bit less patience for him and make him, you know, for better or worse, earn that ranking more so than in the past when they would have gotten that blue blood bump?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the same question can be put on several different programs this year with new faces, new names. How much is it the program versus the coach that gives every, you know, that benefit of the doubt? Reed, you had something else on your
mind. No, I was just going to say, you know, NIL's really flipped everything upside down. We used to go into the schedule saying, okay, we're pretty confident here, but the NIL has just like flipped everything upside down. So I'll leave it with that. Y'all enjoy the evening. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Reed. We always appreciate you listening and calling in. Well, hey, you know, speaking of NIL, you know, Sirius, did you see this commercial out of Nebraska with DeColdis Crawford with SOS heating and air conditioning? Because that, to me, is just the prime example of what NIL in a vacuum should be. A fun, awesome commercial. Gets to have a really successful opportunity for a small business and an opportunity for a star player to also make his name known. I absolutely loved watching that commercial a little bit earlier this week.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Was this not like kind of almost a crowdfunded idea to begin with? Of, you know, when NIL happened, people were like, oh, they got a guy named DeColdis. Like, he has to do, you know, some kind of like an HVAC AC type commercial with that name. And then it was like, oh yeah, no, we're going to do that.
But no, it's a fantastic commercial. He narrates, you know, SOS heating and air conditioning, gives you the best price and the fairest estimations and the longest guarantees, so on and so forth. I did love, of course, you know, with the NIL era, you have to make sure that you can't necessarily say, you know, Nebraska football player DeColdis Crawford endorses this. They can only say, you know, DeColdis sponsors this. And when they introduce him, he says, like, you know, hey, I'm originally from Louisiana, and now I play football in Lincoln. Not I'm a Cornhusker, not I play with Nebraska, but I play football in Lincoln. I wear a red and white jersey that is definitely not referring to anything else. But no, I still love that commercial. I loved seeing that interaction and the way that it came together. And again, when you have a name like DeColdis, you know, I'm now just waiting for the next recruit that's coming up that's going to be named Tostitos or PlayStation or anything else like that, just to bring us some other great commercials.
I mean, unfortunately, some of these schools have some rules on when it comes to what types of industries you can do NIL deals with. You know, gambling, obviously, off the table. Certain forms of adult activities off the table, like tobacco and alcohol, because Courvoisier smoke, I mean, come on. If it wasn't for that, he would have some, you know, all-time great NIL endorsements with a name like Courvoisier smoke. But unfortunately, you know, can't have too much fun in college yet, even though they can at least do some NIL deals. So certain things are off the table. But yeah, it's going to be interesting now that we finally have, you know, some financial payouts for being on the you know, all names list at the start of the season when people are pouring through these rosters looking for very unique names that we see with college football players.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, we're even seeing now in something that I also think is absolutely fantastic. Other people may disagree. They are welcome to do that. You know, we saw a lot of NIL deals happen with the LSU quarterback, Miles Brennan. So he was a player who, you know, he was the original heir apparent to take over after Joe Burrow had graduated and went off to the NFL. He ended up kind of losing a quarterback battle after being injured. And after NIL opened up, he got all these deals from places like Raising Cane's and all these other Louisiana businesses. And ultimately, you know, earlier this week, he stepped away from football and decided, hey, I'm done with this. I'm going to focus on my health. This has been a great run. But, you know, he's now walked out with all these checks without having to even play a single down. Now, I know that there's some people who are going to be out there who says, hey, you know, these people should be able to sue and get their money back because he didn't perform on the field that the way that they wanted. Well, with the way that everything is set up with NIL, you're not paying for performance. That's not what these NIL deals are for. And it's also in the legislation for a lot of this stuff in the NCAA that says you can't be paid strictly on that performance. So for me, I was really glad to see, you know, a student athlete who ended up getting injured, couldn't play down, couldn't end up in the NFL, was still able to get some kind of pay for saying, hey, I was a starting LSU quarterback and I'm able to get some kind of compensation, even if I'm injured. What are your initial thoughts on a situation like that, Cyrus?
Well, I mean, it's not even the fact that you can't tie it. You're not supposed to tie it to, or you don't tie it to performance on the field. You legally can't tie it to performance on the field. You're only paying them for their name, image, and likeness. That's it. You're not paying them for how they do on Saturdays. And, you know, coming out and like, oh, they should sue over it. Like, on what grounds? You have no standing. All you're doing is paying them for their name, image, and likeness. He is still Miles Brennan. That hasn't changed. He just isn't going to be a starting quarterback for LSU. That's it. You know, unless you were saying that you're going to do that, which, again, puts you afoul of the various NCAA and LSU rules that, you know, like I said, there's not a whole lot of them, but there are some that you still do have to follow. And that's one of them, is that it's still not pay for performance. It's pay for appearance.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think that's always going to be something that, you know, I know there's a couple of purists in college football who say, you know, this isn't the sport that I fell in love with. This is not the sport that I enjoy. And more power to those who feel that way. But I know for us, at least with me, you, a lot of the team at Reddit CFB, we're very pro player. We're pro letting these guys get a little bit of agency, especially in a world where, you know, these coaches are guaranteed these $100 million contracts. If they do poorly on the field, they'll get their $10 million buyout. They'll be taken care of. But these young guys, the guys who are actually getting hit, the guys who are risking knee injuries, the guys who are working and trying to do everything that they can to make a name for themselves, have a little bit of opportunity on the open market and be able to use a little bit of capitalism for themselves. I absolutely love that opportunity. I absolutely love that players can do this. And especially when it comes out pure, like in the way that Dakoldis Crawford was able to do it at Nebraska. I know that's always the ideal. And, you know, in college football, nothing is ever always going to be the ideal. But I've always loved the fact that this is a opportunity now where, you know, 5 years ago, this would have never been able to happen for any college player without some kind of sanctions. I'm a huge proponent of letting these guys actually be able to step into the ring. And, you know, if they want to get paid, they can get paid if they can find somebody willing to pay.
Well, I think that part of it is that a lot of people say that they're pro-player empowerment. But then when it comes to an event that puts their team at a deficit, they get hurt by that, then all of a sudden they're against it. And it's a very selfish approach. And I think that one of the reasons that we've highlighted so many of these cases involving NIL with student athletes over the past year or so is that we've seen so many great examples of these athletes using their NIL for good things. I mean, yeah, some of them are doing the fun things where they're getting sponsored by a luxury car dealership and they're driving the cars that are nicer than the Chargers that everybody was, you know, alleged to be taking under the table, which, side note, RIP to the Charger, one of the favorite cars of Crutes across the country for several years, going to be discontinued in the near future. But now,
rest in peace to it and the Challenger.
Pour one out. But now a lot of these recruits are using that money, that NIL awareness, and also the funds they're generating with it to do so many good things, whether that's, you know, donating turkeys to families in need over the holidays, raising awareness for mental health, just so many different things that they've been able to use that money and their publicity to help with. And, you know, I think that for most people, like if you know 18 to 22 year olds, you know that, especially the ones that are in this kind of an environment where a lot of them, because of their team activities, they've been placed in positions where they're expected to give back to the community. They're expected to interact, to try to help build people up. A lot of them are coming from backgrounds where they've seen it firsthand, whether that's other teammates or their own personal family situations, that when they're given a chance to help other people, they're going to do some fun things with that, but they're also going to act on their own heart, and they're going to try to give back to these communities and the people around them and use that for good. And they just never had that chance previously. So it's been really awesome to see that, in addition to the fact that these guys are finally getting the chance to get paid for putting their bodies on the line for our entertainment.
Right. And you're also going to have always the weird fringe cases of, you know, in a time that seems so long ago. You know, I think back to 2017 when there was the UCF kicker who was Donald De La Haye. And, you know, the NCAA said, hey, congratulations on your vlog on YouTube, but we know that you're getting some ad money off of that. You need to either pick between YouTube or playing football, which I think, again, is just such a mind-boggling, you know, argument that needs to be made on, you know, we're going to disqualify this one player for having a YouTube channel. It's things like that don't happen anymore because of NIL, and it's because of that I love the fact that these players have a little bit more agency, they have a little bit more opportunity. If they've got mouths to feed at home, if they've got family to take care for, or they just even want a little bit of spending money around campus and they want to do it without, you know, doing the $100 handshakes with boosters at dinner or something else like that, it gives them the opportunity to legally do that. Now, of course, we are talking about NIL at the current moment, but we are 11 days away from the kickoff of week zero for the 2022 college football season, and we want to hear from you. If you want to drop down onto that bottom left-hand corner, hit that request button. We'd love to have you come up here. Tell us some of your thoughts heading into the season, some of your questions, and what you're considering for what you're excited about for this upcoming year. There's a lot to be excited about. We've just talked about the AP poll and some of the rankings that have come out of that. Sirius, I'm really excited, especially for week zero. You know my bias on this, and you've got it right in your avatar. I am super excited to see Timmy Chang start off the year with the Hawaii Rainbow Warriors. They're starting off against Vanderbilt at home. I'm really excited for that week zero game, and I know you'll be excited about it too. But what are some of those matchups, like in that very early part of the season, that you look to and go, man, I'm going to be excited for college football to come back because of this game?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. You know, Timmy Chang's going to have his first season at Hawaii this year, and it's really kind of Clark Lee's first season too, because last year was very much a season zero kind of approach, that there was a lot of rebuilding and retooling that had to be done. And this will be, I think, our first real look into seeing what his tenure at Vanderbilt is going to look like. So I'm curious to see how they do. I know that they're going to be enjoying their time on the islands. I think they're going to be down there for an entire week is what I heard. So
yes, they are.
Getting to spend some time out there instead of just a quick trip. If you're going to go all that way, you might as well make it worth it. I think we have to mention at least the oddball game of week zero, which is Nebraska at Northwestern in Dublin for some reason.
The finest American exports. The finest American exports to Europe.
You know, I guess this is like our like punishment for them, you know, forcing Guinness on us, that, you know, like, as if that's the greatest thing that Ireland has to export, is that we're going to send them Nebraska and Northwestern and tell them that it's good football. But yeah, it's Nebraska's coming off of a wacky season last year where they were just statistical outliers based off of how they got to the record they did. And we'll see. I think this is potentially Scott Frost's last gasp if he doesn't get it turned around and, you know, win what? Does making a bowl game save Scott Frost in Nebraska? Does he need to win 7 or 8? Is 6 just going to piss people off?
I mean, I think 6 would be in a right direction, and especially if it's the right 6. I mean, you know, if you do 6 wins in Nebraska and you're winning games like, oh, yay, we beat Minnesota. Oh, yay, we beat Northwestern. Like, that's going to be, you know, somewhat temperamental. But, you know, if he hosts Oklahoma in week 4 of the season and they end up beating them in Memorial Stadium, that's going to be some standing power. He shows up and he does something impressive against Jim Harbaugh when they go to Michigan, presuming he's still with the program. By the time that they get to Michigan, that's going to be really, really good for him. It's going to be those types of games that are going to be the games where, you know, if you get to 6-6, but you beat Oklahoma, that's going to be possibly even a contract extension when you go there for Scott Frost. I think, obviously, you know, that Northwestern game is going to be kind of a mood setter. We kind of mentioned that earlier with Notre Dame and Ohio State and how that's going to determine Marcus Freeman's year when we go into Notre Dame season. I think we're going to see a same exact thing with Scott Frost and the Nebraska Cornhuskers when they play Northwestern. You know, they just got Mark Whipple as their offensive coordinator. He was at Pitt last year, helped build Jordan Addison and Kenny Pickett into being the offense that they were. And I think hopefully that might be able to spark a little bit of life into the Nebraska offense. You've obviously got games with North Dakota, which can be an easy pickup. You've got Rutgers and Indiana as two of your other games in your first 6. I mean, there's a very feasible, 4-2, 5-1 type of start to the Cornhusker season. And I think if you're Scott Frost, you absolutely need that type of hot start. And I think even if you get, you know, an embarrassing loss somewhere in there, like you end up slipping against Indiana, pick it back up again against Rutgers, if you got that win against Oklahoma, that's going to buy you a long runway on that. But serious, you know, I'm also looking at these week zero games. You know, we got football starting in 11 weeks. One game that's really intriguing to me.
11 days, JD. Don't throw us back into the midst of the offseason. It's not 11 weeks.
Oh, my goodness. Did I say
scary? Weeks? Scary statement. Scary statement.
11 days. 11 days. 11 days. You know, but still, though, in 11 days, we've got some really intriguing football happening with two games that I've got circled. I think mostly just because it'll be like great temperature checks to see what's happening at these programs. The first one for me is Wyoming at Illinois. You got Brett Bielema in his second year at Illinois. I kind of want to see what kind of momentum he can build with the Illinois, and especially with Wyoming. You know, Craig Bohl is now one of the elder statesmen in the Mountain West Conference these days. And where we saw Utah State ended up winning it last year, Blake Anderson in this incredible turnaround ended up getting a 10-plus win season. How a Wyoming can rally back and become a contender in the Mountain West Conference to try to usurp that kind of position. We've seen for a while Boise State, little bit more of a slide. They're not that dominant program that they used to be, still among the best in the Mountain West. But with Wyoming, starting with that game with a lower to mid power five, we talk about statement games. That's an opportunity for Wyoming to make a statement for what they want their season to be coming up with this year. I'm very, very intrigued to see how that game's going to happen in Urbana-Champaign.
Well, and speaking of Wyoming, you know, they lost their leading receiver last year, Isaiah Nayer, who wound up transferring to Texas, and then just found out he's likely going to be out for the season after, I believe, what's been reported as an ACL injury during one of the very first practices at Texas this offseason. So just really sad news when you see a player who was able to have a great season parlay that into getting a shot at a big-name program and more publicity to try to build draft stock, and then something tragic like this happens. But then you also, they lost, you know, top rusher. Valade is now at Arizona State. So there's going to be some turnover there for Wyoming. And it'll be interesting to see how they deal with that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm also looking, you know, I had mentioned there are two games that I'm looking at outside of that Vanderbilt-Hawaii matchup. One of the things that I'm very interested in for week zero is North Texas going out to El Paso to take on the UTEP Miners. One of the stats that absolutely blew my mind this offseason is Seth Luttrell, who was once the hottest game in town. There were rumors that he's going to take the Kansas State job. He ended up choosing to stay with the Mean Green. He's been there for a while now. And what had come to my attention is he is now the longest tenured head coach in the state of Texas right now. Seth Luttrell at the University of North Texas is the longest standing head coach in the state of Texas. And it absolutely blows my mind knowing that this is probably going to be a hot seat year for him. When he goes out to El Paso, he's going against a team that, you know, got to bowl eligibility for the first time in a very, very long time, has a lot of momentum with Dana Dimmel out there in El Paso. There's a lot of excitement in that community. And when you look at the type of production that they're going to have, I'm very intrigued to see what the Mean Green end up doing, especially if this is going to be a year where the coaching carousel is not as crazy as hot as it was last year. If they decide to move on from Seth Luttrell, if Seth Luttrell can make a statement this year and say, I'm still the right guy for this job, I'm fascinated to see, especially with all of the lower level transitions happening right now with the American Conference, with the Sun Belt, with CUSA, where that is going to end up going. It kind of seems like these are two programs on two different trajectories, and I'm very intrigued to see how much that's going to play out, at least in week zero for these programs.
How weird would it be if you went back to yourself in 2017, 2018, and you told past you that Seth Luttrell would be on the hot seat in 2022 after taking North Texas to, well, number one, the fact that he would still be at North Texas, and number two, the fact that he's taken him to 5 bowl games in 6 years, and he's still in the hot seat, considering he was coming off of a 9-5 and a 9-4 season in 17 and 18 and was getting a lot of attention, and his name was being tossed up for a lot of P5-type coaching positions. And he's still there, and his situation is not stable at all. Just amazing how much that's changed despite having a relatively good amount of success for a program like North Texas.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a thing of, you know, you mentioned those 2017 and 2018 years, but he's now looking at three straight losing seasons. He's had a 14-21 record since that 2018 year. And I'm really curious to see, especially when he goes against, you know, a Dana Dimel program where UTEP is in a bowl game for the first time in an exceptionally long time. I really want to see, you know, if you're going to have Austin Aun, try to keep up his opportunity to be the starting quarterback. You've got guys like Roderick Burns. You got Damon Ward. Jaire Shorter should be back from injury to make that offense really interesting for the Mean Green. But when I'm looking at this upcoming season, again, I'm still just blown away at the fact that Seth Littrell, after all that attention, is now somehow the longest tenured head coach in the state of Texas, and he's continued to stay at UNT as opposed to getting off into a different program, harking off of that success. You know, I also want to continue to look through this week zero schedule. Again, at any point, if any of y'all want to hop on the stage, give us any kind of thoughts that you got on the college football season, go ahead and request it. We'd love to have you up here. Take your calls, take your comments, take your questions. But as I'm looking at these week zero games, I'm looking at games now that might end up becoming statement games in the wrong direction. And one of those first ones that I'm immediately seeing is Duke Ness against Florida State. I think Mark Norvell, they fired Willie Taggart for a worse or for a better record. And Mike Norvell obviously has a longer runway because he's trying to build up the program. He's trying to get the recruits in. We're going to have Carter Correll's on the show on Thursday to talk about some of the differences that's happened in camp. You're getting some offensive line recruits that you haven't really seen, at least since the days of the heyday of Jimbo Fisher. So, certainly not the final days of Jimbo Fisher, but you're starting to see some kind of movement. But, you know, last year you lost the number one overall recruit in the country to a HBCU. You've got Deion Sanders, who ended up poaching that player specifically as an FSU alum, starting to make a lot of waves in the coaching world. I'm really interested to see, especially as Florida State hosts an FCS program, what happens to that narrative from Mark Norvell if he doesn't come out and soundly beat that FCS team in that week one or week zero opening game. Of course, that's going to be 5 p.m. Eastern on the ACC network. But it's going to be a really interesting year for Mike Norvell as he comes up trying to be, out of a hot seat situation himself, I would believe.
I mean, if he comes out and he loses to a second FCS team in 2 years after losing to Jacksonville State last year, if he comes out and loses to Duquesne, does he even make it to the post-game interview? Like, does the AD pull him aside and fire him while he's still on the field? Because it's a home game. They can't do it on the tarmac. The incompetence needed to get to that point, which is, you know, not meant as a scratch against the FCS teams, but just the fact that considering the history and the pedigree of that Florida State program, for it to get to the point where you lose to two FCS teams in 2 years, man, you can't imagine that there's any give there whatsoever. I'm not saying that they're going to lose to Duquesne, but you know, God forbid it does happen. Does he make it to the post-game conference?
I mean, it's all going to be the magic of that buyout number, which I believe as of right now, it's $16 million, which again, after paying $18 million to get rid of Willie Taggart, you saw the drop in season ticket attendance at Florida State. Tallahassee is not necessarily an easy to reach place in Florida. A lot of those hotel blocks will end up doing a 2-3-4 night requirement. If somebody is going to go and stay there overnight, you don't have a whole lot of direct flights from around the country headed into there. It's a program that has been struggling without this really strong football program to draw people back in for revenue. We've seen a couple of things happen with at least their donors in bringing up finally some of the facilities that Jimbo Fisher had been demanding for years. And I'm really excited to talk with Carter later this week to get a little bit more of that insight of the boots on the ground and how that's going to turn out. But I think at least for Florida State, I think week zero is going to be kind of a pretty strong indicator of where Mike Norvell has been taking the program in the offseason, where some of his first initial recruiting classes are going to turn out after they've been coached for a little bit, been able to be in a weight room for a little while, be able to learn scheme directly. I think it's going to be a fascinating case study to see what happens with Florida State.
JD, just to kind of piggyback off of that and shift gears a little bit, the comment about the impact, the financial impact of a down football team having on the area reminds me of what happened at Kentucky when it was Joker Phillips at the helm, and he had put up some losing seasons to the point where they were having, you know, all-time lows in attendance. And even for a basketball revenue-driven school like Kentucky, or what you think of as a basketball-driven school like Kentucky, the sheer size of the football stadium, the number of people that brings in, the amount of, you know, things, whether it's ticket sales or it's food on game day, park passes, whatever, revenue generation that a football program can have for a P5 school, even for a basketball, what we think of as a basketball school at Kentucky, because I'm getting to that, a down football season can have a huge impact on the entire athletic department's budget, which can then impact what the basketball team is able to do in terms of revenue generation, how they spend that money. So this past week, we heard Kentucky basketball coach Calipari come on and say that, you know, Alabama is a football school, but Kentucky is a basketball school. No offense. No offense to the football team, but we're a basketball school. And rightfully so, Mark Stoops, who has been having a very, very good tenure as a Kentucky football coach, coming off of a great season, took a little offense to that. And there was some sparring back and forth. The athletic director had to step in. You know, he was disappointed in what was going on, trying to, you know, build some bridges back up. Supposedly, Calipari and Stoops hadn't talked since, like, Thursday of last week. And of course, in the meantime, Mack Brown's over on the side kind of, you know, shooting a few barbs about how he and UNC's basketball coach have a wonderful relationship and get along great.
Yeah, that was a bizarre episode to just witness, at least from the social media platforms, to see these two Power Five head coaches in two sports, you know, both doing exceptionally well for themselves. John Calipari, his resume speaks for itself in the success that he's had in the basketball world. But in terms of, you know, Mark Stoops also coming out and making comments in a very public fashion, like this was not a, you know, they argued with one another in the back halls at the athletic department. I mean, you had people subtweeting one another. You had people, you know, quote tweeting each other, just kind of trying to bring up, like, no, my sport is more important. My sport is better. To watch that in a very public setting, I thought was absolutely baffling for any type of reason. Because, you know, we've heard before of, you know, oh, we go to a basketball school, so we're going to have to listen to the basketball coach. Or, oh, this is a football school, so this comes first and foremost. Or even in some parts in the South, I mean, you'll even hear sometimes like, oh, we're a baseball school. Or if you're in the North, oh, we're a hockey school. Or something similar to that, where there's clearly a top dog for some program. Granted, at Kentucky, you've got Mark Stoops winning games against Florida. You've got them going to bowl games. You've got them in top 10 rankings. You've got consistent double-digit wins. You've got a consistent double-digit number of wins over the course of several years. I think at one point he had quote tweeted, you know, four postseason wins or four postseason appearances, which, you know, compared to John Calipari taking a earlier than expected exit against some non-powers in the college tournament last year. That certainly, I'm sure, had absolutely nothing to do to fuel that fire. But I thought that was an absolutely bizarre situation that had come out of Kentucky. And for this season going forward, you know, I think, again, Mark Stoops has a great opportunity in the SEC East to be that number two team. I don't think anybody's going to be challenging Georgia to try to get back into Atlanta for the SEC title game. But I think at least in terms of what Kentucky has in front of them, they've got Louisville as their only Power 5 out-of-conference schedule. They've got a very manageable slate outside of Georgia. You've got Florida in a first year with Billy Napier, and we're not quite sure what that's going to look like for the Gators just yet. You've got some proven commodities. You have some consistency with coaching. This is going to be a very fun year for Kentucky. And, you know, I don't think anybody's going to say they're a football school over a basketball school by any stretch of the imagination. But I think you might be able to have some kind of argument of in the modern day, you're starting to see success at both programs. And, you know, I'll be really curious to see if you see another early exit from Kentucky basketball in the tournament. And, you know, Mark Stoops wants to say something about his Citrus Bowl win or his Outback Bowl win or whatever bowl game that they get to at the end of the year. I think it'll be a very fun opportunity, at least when we get into the next offseason for that.
I think one of the interesting things to me is that hearing a comment like that from Calipari, who, as you said, he's got a long record of success, feeling the need to kind of, you know, send a stray shot Mark Stoops' way for some reason. When you go to places like, he mentioned Alabama, and I remember, I think it was Mal Moore was the athletic director at the time, and somebody asked him what program he was proudest of at Alabama, and he didn't say the football team. I think it was women's gymnastics. You know, it was either gymnastics or softball. It was one of the women's programs that was obviously a non-revenue program, but that was just on an absolutely dominant streak. And that's what he was most excited about. You know, some of these programs, they speak for themselves. But, yeah, Calipari taking a shot at the football team just to do it for you know, no real good reason. Quite the faux pas on his part.
Yeah, and again, I think it's always just fascinating to see, you know, not just a fight between coaches, but that public of a fight between coaches. I think I really loved Calipari's final statement in all of that, where he tweeted out, you know, I'm going to do what I've done for 30 years, put my head down and coach, when it was like, you know, hey, man, you were the one who started all of this.
right? he's the source of the drama here.
Mm-hmm. But hey, you know, when we have those types of arguments, that's when you know that the offseason is getting through its slog. We are so close to football happening, and I cannot wait for it. And, you know, one of the other news stories that I did see earlier today, you know, we were talking about odd things to see. You know, Sirius, when you think of New York City, when you think of the Pinstripe Bowl, you definitely think of yards, lawns, and lawn care equipment, right?
Not exactly.
Oh, you don't? Well, I guess, you know, that's why you need the brand awareness of the Bad Boy Mowers Pinstripe Bowl, baby. That official name coming out today. I absolutely love the fact that the Bad Boy Mowers brand is back for bowl games, officially taking over the Pinstripe Bowl. Because again, when you think of the concrete jungle, you think of lawnmowers in New York City. But man, I am so excited to see yet another fun, stupid name for a bowl. It's one of the best parts of this sport. And I can't wait to see, you know, the implications of what they're going to do for like bowl game ceremonies for this. I mean, when they had it at the Gasparilla Bowl, you had the lawnmower races between those hay bales. You know, I'm now expecting, you know, these giant derbies in Central Park with these giant lawnmowers when it comes down to the Bad Boy Mowers Pinstripe Bowl. I love the absurdity of it, and I cannot wait to see, you know, some combination of, you know, like a Pitt and, you know, like a Pitt Penn State or some kind of combination, a Michigan Boston College or some other game like that happening in the freezing cold in late December in New York, all sponsored by a lawn care company. I absolutely love to see it.
I think they definitely need to bring back the lawnmower races. And I mean, just the idea of having a lawnmower race in the middle of the Bronx is that's going to be entertaining. Especially when you have all these people that are like, you know, what is a zero turn lawnmower and why is it called a bad boy?
I'm just trying to picture, like, you know, someone with a New York accent. I'm not going to pretend to do one because I cannot do one. Just arguing about all the different lines and amenities that, you know, you would hear in the South of, you know, turn radius, horsepower, blade length, and all this other kind of stuff that you would fight about with your Southern lawn. But just to hear that from a New York accent, from a Jersey accent, oh, man, that's going to be absolutely glorious when we get to that game. But of course, you know, it's one of the many fun, absurd things that we get to look forward to. We've got football happening so close. We can almost taste it. I'm super excited for all the games that are going to be happening, not even just at the FBS level, but the FCS level as well. We're going to be seeing a lot of great games happening in week zero for there as well. I mean, we just had that conversation with North Dakota State's athletic director not too long ago, talking about the excitement that's building up in Fargo for the FCS season to go ahead and get started. And it's one of those beautiful, beautiful things of, you know, you've got your FCS competition. Like, you know, we've already talked about the buyout game that Florida State's going to have. We've talked a little bit about some of the other games. I mean, I'm excited about Idaho State at UNLV. I'm excited about Austin Peay at Western Kentucky. But even beyond that, you've got plenty of pretty good FCS games that's going to be coming up. Howard versus Alabama State in one of the classics is going to be coming up on that Saturday as well on ESPN. That's going to be one of those special games that's held in Atlanta, Georgia. You've similarly got Stephen F. Austin, who's going to be a fantastic team, going against Jacksonville State. They're going to play that in Montgomery, Alabama. I'm very excited about that as well. But to see all levels of college football coming back in less than 2 weeks, man, that's going to be a beautiful thing.
And looking ahead to September 3rd, South Dakota State travels to Iowa.
Hey, you know, I'm pretty confident that nothing bad has ever happened when a Dakota State goes to visit Iowa. Nothing bad has ever happened with that, right?
And it never rains in Autzen, right?
Correct, correct. But man, you know, we are so close to the college football season. I am so excited for the kickoffs to actually return, for pads to be put on, for hits to be made. It's going to be an incredibly exciting time, and we're looking forward to watching all of those games happen. We're going to go ahead and wrap up here real quick. As a reminder, again, we've got a couple more spaces coming up this week. Tomorrow night, 10 p.m. Eastern, we're going to be talking about State of Texas football with Mike Craven. He is the college football insider for Dave Campbell's Texas Football. That's considered the football Bible in the Lone Star State. It's one of the most premier publications on everything to do with Texas football, from the high school level all the way through the college and pro levels. Mike Craven is a longtime beat writer for the Texas Longhorns, for UTSA. He's now based out of Dallas, working for Dave Campbell's Texas Football. We're going to have an awesome conversation with him tomorrow at 10 p.m. Eastern to talk about all the things that are happening in the state of Texas for football. And then, of course, on Thursday.
And JD,
yes, sir.
We can't mention Dave Campbell's Texas Football without encouraging the listeners to go back, do a little bit of homework in case they missed it the first time. We had the two people who were on the cover of Dave Campbell's Texas Football this year,
yes,
Jeff
yes.
Traylor and Joey McGuire, both on the program. We got to hear a little bit about what's going on with their programs at Texas Tech and at UTSA after having a great season for Jeff Traylor and Joey McGuire off to a new season at Texas Tech. So do a little homework for the listeners, and that way they'll be ready for tomorrow night's guest.
Yes, yes, absolutely. You can catch all of those on all of your favorite podcast platforms, whether that be Podbean, whether that be Spotify, whether that be Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts from. Those are back in our previous conversations. Strongly recommend taking a look at those conversations. And then, of course, on Thursday, we're going to have Carter Correll's. We've talked about Florida State a little bit. Really excited to talk with a boots on the ground reporter on that. That's happening Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern. We're going to be talking about the Noles. Now, Sirius, you know, we'll have a couple final minutes here before we go ahead and wrap up. You know, one story that I know that we've been saving, you know, I heard that Lane Kiffin Now might have a new walk-on, but it was kind of unusual circumstances. What happened with that situation?
You know, it's a tale as old as time, right? You need a position player in special teams running short. Where do you go find one? And you go to Frat Row and start scouting out who all's hanging out at the keggers and might have the talent to kick for you on Saturdays, right? Is that not where college football coaches go to find talent?
Hey, you know, when Lane Kiffin says come to the SIP, you know, he's not talking about sips of sweet tea. So I'm sure that is how every college football does it, right?
Well, you know, if I had a nickel for every time that an SEC team found a kicker on Frat Row, I'd have two, which isn't very many, but it's weird that it's happened twice. Because some people might remember, and there actually is a slight Lane Kiffin connection here, because it happened again at Tennessee the year after he left, and back in 2011, or maybe a couple of years after he left, back in 2011 when Derek Dooley was there, and they called up Derek Broaddus at 6 o'clock on game day. And it was a 7 p.m. kick against Middle Tennessee State. And they had to send a this is all what was relayed to us from the staff. They had to send a police escort to get him to the stadium, because if you've ever been in Knoxville on game day, you know, it swells up to become one of the largest cities in the state because of so many fans coming in. And it's just an absolute madhouse between that part of campus and the stadium. And allegedly Broaddus was just laying on his couch, and they got a he got a phone call. They needed him at the stadium, so they rush him there because their starting kicker had gotten hurt on Thursday in practice. The backup pulled a muscle during warmups, so the freshman walk-on was their only option left to kick. And according to Dooley, he said, which highly quotable coach, for better or worse, he said, let's get an APB out on Broaddus, and it's a good thing he wasn't having too much fun on a Saturday afternoon. Because I told the coaches, hey, an intoxicated Broaddus is better than nobody, so get him, just get him here, we'll give him a breathalyzer. And he actually, you know, was able to get there prior to the start of the game, got into his pads and onto the field and everything, made three PATs and a field goal. They won 24-0. Absolute legend.
Absolutely incredible. Now, I'm sure we're going to see this same exact situation playing out with Ole Miss with this new walk-on from Frat Row. That's going to be a very, very fun thing to see. And, you know, I hope that guy gets every amount of playing time and he gets some kind of NIL deal with Natty Light. I want to see this. I want to see this world where this can happen. Well, you know, we are hitting about the 10 o'clock hour here in Central Time. Want to thank all of you for coming in and joining us for a quick little talk show on a Tuesday night. We are excited to have our guests coming on later this week, and we are excited to talk with all of you again very, very soon. So on behalf of Reddit CFB, I am JD Moore. On behalf of Sirius, we appreciate you all coming out and hanging out with us for a little bit. But now I'ma hang up and listen.